Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kay Rhodes.
And me, Maystein Wazwaz. So a couple of weeks ago, we got a letter from...
Oh, yeah. You need to know about this one.
From Loretta Huang, who is the director of the International Art Museum of America. We did an episode a while back on this one. I'm not sure if you remember. And
our best episode, in my opinion.
It was a pretty fun episode. Pretty good episode.
I feel like that was our... That was like... We were doing like This American Life status.
I don't know about that.
That was our Pulitzer Prize.
I think
prize.
That might have been more...
Is it a Pulitzer that you get on radio?
I don't know.
Peabody?
Oh.
Is that for television?
I think no, I don't know.
Journalism?
I don't
okay,
fucking know.
Okay, moving right along.
Moving right along. That was maybe one of our more investigative programs.
Yeah.
I would say. Versus just the total bantering.
Just not shooting the shit.
Anyhow, turns out Loretta and her staff over at the IAMA were...
They took great issue with everything. Pretty much everything
great issue
we
with
said.
Everything we said. And they very... what's the word?
Verbosely?
Yeah. Very prolifically. No. They just kidding. They
really broke down.
They really broke it down. Thank you. Point
issue
by point.
By issue,
I think
yeah.
There's seven issues and there's a full paragraph on each issue.
Including a lot of things that I felt like we just mentioned in passing.
The
plants in the garden when you walk
that
into that place.
It's like, yo, so what?
Who gives a shit? That has so little to do with what we were talking about. I mean, if I were them, I would have to spent that entire letter trying to explain in like a real watertight way why they are not a cult.
Yeah, well, they didn't want to get into that. I don't think
they said they weren't religiously affiliated.
That's all.
We have a link to it down in the thingy. I wanted to read the whole thing, but Maystein wasn't feeling it.
I just don't feel like we need to read the whole letter from them.
But I would also like to extend a invitation to anyone that is a scholar or an expert of some kind in East Asian contemporary art.
Mm-hmm.
Because they
offered to take us on a tour.
We didn't know enough about art from that part of the world to even talk about the stuff in there.
Right.
And I feel like I have a good eye for what's a reproduction,
right.
A printed reproduction and not an original work.
Yeah.
And what's a cult and what's creepy and scary.
I love how it's like I have an eye for what's a reproduction and what's a cult.
Yes, exactly. So if anybody wants, they invited us to go on another visit there,
a tour. But we don't want to go alone.
And we want some people that maybe might have a little more clout than we do to really identify what's going on at this place.
Yeah. We would love it.
So if you're into that, I have a couple people actually I'm trying to get in contact with about that, but... I think Maysoon's a little scared to go back.
I'm not scared. I just want to be done with it.
I'm scared to go back.
I just am kind of like, well, I'm sorry you disagreed with our take, our review of your museum. Thank you for giving us some of your input.
Uh-huh.
Some things, yes, you might be right around that we may have overlooked or were a little flippant.
But they were so...
But most of the things I'm kind of like,
minutia.
I still actually don't agree with most of this. So sorry. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
We have a link to that letter. They posted that letter... their response letter to us on their website and our research
on
assistant,
their website.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
And our research assistant, Katie Kondo, wanted to know if they have a whole section of their website devoted to writing to people who are casting aspersions on their institution. Because if you look this place up, all there is articles and Yelp reviews saying that this is the weirdest place in the world.
I know. Well, and it's weird because I actually looked up all of their staff members because I was like, who are these people? What is their background? Should I not say this out loud?
No, I'm very interested in this.
Well, because I was kind of like, she's charging us with not having any idea what we're talking about. I'm like, I don't know. Kate and I have had a lot of years of experience working in the arts and talking about the arts and looking at art and all of that good stuff. And I was sort of curious to know who her staff were. Like, are these like scholars, PhDs in arts? And then there's really like, okay, well, yeah, maybe we should actually have a conversation and... I don't know. But they're all like, 20-year-old like marketing people, which is fine.
I think
they're young. They're
just
young.
One person that came from another place.
Arts.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, God.
But I'm glad that they got in touch. I think they should. I'm happy to post the email and like I said in my response email, like, we will post this, we will let our viewers decide. You'll probably get a few more people into the museum actually to check it out, which is a good thing ultimately.
Yeah.
So, and then she offered to take us on a tour, which I'd be happy to do if some of you wanted to go with us.
Yes. Let us know what you think about all this. Are you over it? Or do you want the show to become just a show about this place and nothing else? Give us a call, 419-351-6606. You can also text that number or bird us, send your peregrine falcon to us with its little hood thing on, and we'll catch it on our leather gauntlet.
No hooded birds, please.
To @PineTreePodcast. I'd be interested to know what you think. Yeah. Speaking of listener feedback, got some live listener feedback. Seems the only way I can get feedback from a listener is to approach them physically and talk to them verbally. We talked about when people come to an artist and say, "What are you up to?"
Oh, yeah.
And how that can be an act of aggression.
Yeah, that was new. That was learning.
We had a listener tell us that that you should chill out, kind of. This is my interpretation of what they said.
The artist
needs to chill out, because if somebody is expecting you to just say, like, oh, nothing, like, I have nothing going on, I'm a failure or whatever, then they're an asshole.
No one's expecting you to say that, though.
To say nothing?
Yeah,
that I have nothing going on.
There's nothing happening. I suck.
Well, I think that our listener who brought this up was thinking maybe they are. If they're like bringing it up as like kind of a dickish move, then
who does that?
First off, then you know they're an asshole, so it doesn't matter. And two, at least someone's getting something good out of it, because then they get the satisfaction of knowing that you suck, I guess.
You've got nothing going on.
But I was thinking that there's actually quite a lot of variables involved in that whole transaction.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is like, you get asked what you're up to, even if you're not an artist, no matter who you are.
Oh,
what are you
definitely
up to? And so there's always, I mean, I experience this, there's always the pressure to say that you're doing something amazing.
But I feel like
that you have a new thing happening that's worth talking about right then and there.
Yeah. But I feel like if you're in the creative field, even if you're not an artist, if you're some kind of person who's involved in this weird little segment of society.
Tiny segment.
You do have to always be doing something. Like, if you're a curator, if you're whatever, you got to be making your like weird like parasite.
You're writing an essay for some journal somewhere.
Yeah.
You're going to a conference.
You got to be doing something. I feel like people like.
But wait, ultimately, you don't have to be doing something. Let's just give our listeners some.
Well, I think that's kind of what we said last time. Well, but anyway, I think there's a lot of variables.
Okay.
Artist.
Yes, I'm an artist.
And I'm your arch nemesis.
Are you also an artist?
Yes.
Okay. Oh.
So what have you been up to? Are you still making work? I've had that question.
Really?
I've had that question at a show that I had work in.
Oh my God.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Was that from an arch nemesis?
But I don't think they were trying to be mean.
They just didn't realize that you were on the fucking list of artists in the show?
I don't know.
Oh my God. Are you still making work?
Are you still working?
Did you just get a job at an office after grad school I did?
No, this was when I was still just got out of undergrad. But I don't know. I don't know, man. But like, who gives a shit? Like, if you did get a job at an office, you probably had to get that job. The levels of bullshit.
This is a high level. High level, would you say, this one here?
The scenario of the nemesis.
Is this like an 8, maybe?
Well, I guess then what is your response to that? You don't want to get mad even if that is your response internally.
I guess you could kind of skip over and just answer the one question. Are you still making work?
And be like, yep, sure am.
Yep.
I actually have some in the show right here.
Yeah. And then walk away and be like, good to see you. When those sort of situations happen, I feel like I'm always looking for like, what is the most direct and quick way to answer and get out?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Like, especially if they're just being assholes. And maybe they weren't, but if you feel like they might be, or you just have no...
I think more often than not, people are just socially weird and imperceptive and just don't know that they're hurting your feelings.
Right.
Okay, second scenario.
Okay.
You really have nothing going on.
Yeah, that's okay.
And you see, like, your old professor or something.
Yeah.
You know? who, like,
you can say you're still teaching that same class year after year.
That's good.
Just kidding. Professors, we love you.
No, I don't think anybody would be offended by that.
Everyone needs to think about it, though.
I don't know
how they approach people.
So anyhow, my point is in all this is just that there's quite a few variables.
So what happens? What happens if someone approaches you and asks if you, what
when
you're
you really
to,
have nothing going on?
You've got nothing going on. You haven't
I don't
been.
Know,
you
man.
Haven't been in the studio for months.
To be perfectly honest, in my case, I feel like I would lie.
That's because you're such a nutball.
Like, oh yeah, you know, I'm working on this. Like, you know, it's very layered project. It's taking a lot of time. I don't know when I'm going to be able to show it, but. It's like a deep
Why don't
research
you just say,
practice.
Oh, you know, I'm taking a break, but I'm going on a residency next month for a year.
See, that's a huge lie. That's a bigger lie than my lie.
Well, can you say you're taking a break? Is that
I don't
what
know,
that mean?
Man. I feel like you say that, and then somebody's gonna be like, "Oh,
fuck them. Who cares if they say, oh?"
See, I think that's kind of what our listener was getting at: is that you just kind of have to be fuck them.
Let's say the scenario is that you have a studio, you're working in the studio, but you haven't gotten a show for like a year or any kind of like showing opportunity, which makes you feel really bad. Right.
Yeah.
Make you feel bad.
I don't know. I think that's still, what we were, that's another thing I think
like,
we
that,
were trying
like,
to get
what,
at.
What's the measure? You know, like what mean, it, what's doing something? What are you up to? Is being in the studio something you're up to? Is getting a show something you're up to?
Well, I think that's like, okay, there's tiers.
Well, right, because that's what I'm saying. Like
is top it, tier is something not, you can put on your CV.
But clearly it's not enough to just be working in your studio. Like you
No,
feel
that
like
second
that's
tier, you go to that tier when you don't have anything in the top tier to share.
Okay.
There's tiers.
And then the next tier is like you start talking about your family.
The next
the family
tier
dog.
Is actual tears and you just cry.
When do you just start talking about like the health problems of your pet?
I don't know, man. That's real low on the list.
Okay, so did you and the listener...
I think what we really need to be asking ourselves, Maysoon, is how can we change this?
The other, like, is there... What's the other approach to kind of greeting someone? Like, how else can you greet?
How are you? How's your partner? How's your pet? How's your house? How's your, you know...
But doesn't... What if it's not even a how's your... What
okay.
if it's like a...
Hey, I've been thinking of you.
Hey, I've been thinking about you. Or maybe
or just, hey, I love you.
No.
I don't know. This is another thing. We got to get Keith Hennessy on the show because I feel like he would have a lot of ideas
good,
about
probably.
This.
Probably. We're working on getting Keith Hennessy on the show, everyone. You know, I mean, there's also the approach of like if you are meeting up with someone or if you run into someone at a gallery, you can say, hey, good to see you here and just talk directly about where the place where you are.
That's what they do in Japanese tea ceremonies.
And not actually talk about yourself at all. Just be like... Oh, what do you think of the show?
Yeah.
Just like get out of like, oh, what am I doing? This is the pressure, like stress point around me. It's like, just talk about something else.
Or I
talk about some
talk
article
about
you fucking read
if
about.
If I
or...
have to go to the bathroom.
Well, that's really not exciting, Kate. God damn it, Kate.
It's still a puzzle we're trying to work out.
Should we try to practice this tonight, today, in our life for the next week and then give some feedback?
Oh, yeah. That's a great idea.
Okay, listen.
You try it too, listeners.
Yeah.
Smart.
Let's do it.
Let's see how we can change things. But this is one tiny... part of life that we actually have a tiny bit of control over.
Maybe you should fill your pockets with confetti. Right?
I think that's great.
And just like when you see someone, just give them a little handful of confetti or something.
Who used to do that? Rip Torn?
I don't know. Is that something someone's
Rip
done that
Taylor?
Or?
Yeah.
A magic. I love it.
Okay, that's a great idea.
Let's try confetti. What other ways?
Sleight of hand magic.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Pull the coin out of the ear kind of situation.
Yeah, or like close card tricks.
Maybe like
it's gonna take a lot more work.
Is there like a really quick and simple way to like create a rainbow effect? A prism? Like you have like a piece of glass in your pocket that you can be like.
I think you'd also need like a fog machine or some way to create condensation.
Right. You need a cloud. You need a like a piece of glass in one pocket and a cloud in another. And just like and the light, of course, too.
Okay, so work on that, listeners, and get back to us. We're back in the artist studio for only the second time in this art podcast, which I will never understand why we don't meet more people in their studio, except that studios are everywhere, cafes are only in one place. Okay, we're talking to Weston Teruya.
Artist, arts administrator, arts commissioner, weightlifter, general all-around awesome, lovely guy.
We're not biased at all as journalists. Tell us a little bit about your work.
Let's start with your artistic work.
Okay. So I create sculptural installations out of paper that usually refer to a specific site or community, and through sort of a combination of looking at the geographic site, the history of the site, doing some social research and talking to people in the area or a part of that community, try to create sort of a map or model of what that community looks like, some of the underlying dynamics and histories in that space, and how the physical location shapes the way that people interact in that space.
So you recently installed a show at Montalvo?
They have a show up right now called Possibilities of Paper, and it's a reflection on the last 10 years of the Lucas Artist Program, which is the name of their residency, in sort of its most contemporary state. And they've pulled artists from across the 10 years and sort of had a mixture of new works, and they've asked artists in the past who've been in residence to create these artist pages. So they have this archive of all of the artists who've been there, and so some of those pages are also on display. And I created an installation there that sort of took that mapping idea and the idea of looking at the space of Montalvo, and also so asked people to create pieces that talked about specific objects or places on the grounds that have significance to them. But I also was really interested in the history of Montalvo as this, the former estate of Senator Phelan, and his sort of history as this very, on one hand, one of the biggest benefactors of the arts in the Bay Area, but also this incredibly racist, xenophobic senator who, and one of his campaign sort of state slogans back in the day was "Keep California White." And
really?
Yeah. And had a very particular sort of animosity toward Japanese immigrants. And so as someone of Japanese descent, sort of in that space, I think there were these moments where I reflected on that and tried to figure out how to negotiate that. And, you know, it's this issue, and it's obviously evolved since then, but I did, especially since the grounds, if you spend any time there, it's this space where there's, because it's also sort of a public park, there's a ton of people who come onto the grounds, hike through it, don't even necessarily have a relationship to the arts, but use that space. And a huge portion of those people are Asian immigrant folks. And so there's this sort of funny like juxtaposition of the history and how it's used in this. Yeah. And so I wanted to, and then it was also prompted because on the grounds, there's all of these statuary that's the Griffin itself, which is sort of a reference to Montalvo as a writer and how he wrote about the Amazonian women and this imagined tribe of Amazons led by Queen Califia, who California is named after, and was this black queen of these women warriors, and they rode around on griffins. And so the griffin is one of the icons of Montalvo. So there's griffins on the grounds, and then there's also this weird collection of like sphinxes and other sort of guardian statuary that have these connections to specific cultural communities and histories. And so it's already also embedded in what's physically there on the grounds as well. And so one of the elements that I have in the sculpture is this Shisa guardian figure, which is sort of also known as like a foo dog. And so to sort of reference that, and they actually don't have any of those on the grounds, which I don't know if that's because of the history of the space or what, but that is. But just to sort of insert it there and have that sort of amongst some of the other characters and creatures on the grounds as a way of gesturing toward that history, but also hopefully sort of because they're paper sculptures, they're also these sort of incomplete, fragile elements that aren't, it's not about like having this permanent thing that would replace that and sort of heal the wounds of it, but at least to gesture at this issue and some of the ways that it can potentially be disrupted or at least pointed to.
Is the whole area Montalvo, or is the art center just Montalvo?
The overall art center owns like the parklands and the trails above it, and okay, they lease it, I believe, to the county, and so it's managed, the parklands are managed by the county, but the overall area it's much larger than what the art center itself is at this moment, I believe.
It's so interesting to think about like what's the responsibility of like an institution towards to that history, into like uncovering it, making it accessible, or working towards a different history. It's just like an interesting thing, I'm sure, to think about while you're there working, you know, or in general, I had no idea.
Well, and I think, I mean, in some ways, the way that they seem to have approached that is by inviting in this really diverse range of artists, and so the artists then can grapple with that and deal with that or not deal with that. It's, you know, but that by having this rich sort of array of people coming through the space and having it be a public space, it sort of at least challenges that on a sort of day-to-day factual basis by who gets to be there and gets to engage with the site.
I don't want to put you further on the spot, but I know that you also did a thing at CCA.
Oh, yeah, I went to CCA and I got a MFA in painting and drawing and a MA in visual and critical studies.
Could you tell me anything special about critical studies? I feel like I'm trying to teach myself that shit. And I figure since I think you might be the only person we've had on that has a degree in that. Did you have to write a lot of papers where you have the tiny numbers all over the place?
We did have to write a lot, and it is it's a funny program because it's not a PhD program. I think they're, at least when I was going through it, they recognized that, and so it wasn't trying to necessarily build us up to be all be PhDs and write this, you know, long dissertations and publish books, although there's certainly been people who've gone on to do that work. I think the idea was that they wanted us to be sort of informed public intellectuals and write in that kind of mode. And so it was really about the balance between critical theory and being able to communicate with a broader public about these things and speak intelligently about them, but not necessarily have to always write in that academic way. And I think there's a lot of the folks who've come out of that who've been really successful in juggling how that gets integrated into their work have tried to do that balance. It's funny because for me, I don't know that I've continued to really engage with critical theory necessarily in that way. It was always actually, because I was going through a dual degree program, it was really about having this backup and this way of thinking through and articulating the things I was interested in, and also being able to engage with artists or ideas that weren't necessarily about my work and my practice specifically. And I think in the current work that I do, what I was realizing is in undergrad, I was a pseudo arts major and an Asian American studies minor. Then I did that dual degree in grad school, and now I work sort of balancing artistic practice and being a grant maker. And I think there's a way that has sort of continued through that way in terms of like theory, practice, macro, micro, policy, practitioner kinds of things. And so for me, it's really about being able to step back and look at the broader frameworks of how artists are working or how we sit within this broader cultural landscape and how we can best sort of utilize our artistic skills to push forward certain things or comment on certain things. And so it's less about the writing or theory even specifically and more about that kind of mentality and being able to bring a research base or other kinds of things into either of those processes.
Do you have a favorite like art article or book or anything that listeners or me should check out?
You know, there was, I don't remember the name of the actual article, but there was a piece written by Karen Kosasa, who is a professor at University of Hawaii, and she's also an artist, and it was talking about how to read the sort of the blankness of a new piece of paper or a new painting or the the white cube gallery space against the colonial history of Hawaii, and to that it's important to make sure that we understand that these things are not just like open fields for us to create from the grandness of our original visions, that we're couched in these histories and these politics, and they always intersect with the work that we're doing. And that was especially important for me when I was first sort of encountering that. I think it was when I was in undergrad. And so that was a formative piece for me, I think, at that time.
Cool. I'll put a link to it in the underworld.
So you also work at the San Francisco Arts Commission as a grants maker, as you called it, which is a nice way to put it.
How's that like? Is that weird? You ever got your nemesis coming up for something and you got to try to be real unbiased?
No, but...
I don't believe you. No, but...
It's funny, though, because I do think that raises sort of not the challenge, actually something that I really enjoy. And I know you talked to Jaime Cortez, and he's someone else who I really respect as someone who's juggled those kinds of roles. And one of the things that I remember really learning from Jaime, actually, was that he has this really generous spirit toward a wide range of work, and is really willing to sort of go down and figure out what people's intentions and what role that kind of work plays in the array of communities that we're supposed to be serving. And I think that's something that I try to keep in mind as I'm working, that, you know, I sit in my own position as a visual artist, as an individual practitioner with, you know, whatever backgrounds I come from. But, you know, being there, I've had to learn a lot about dance, or, you know, traditional and folk arts, and all of these other forms that I may not necessarily connect with on an individual level, but I can really appreciate and have come to understand what roles those things play in the community. And so it's a really great way to get this overview of how different pieces of the community fit together, and how this broader thing that we call arts all sort of engages with different people in our city, in our region, in our world.
I guess I kind of wanted to ask you what some of the more, what are the important issues you're looking at with the Arts Commission, like as far as like the larger arts community in the Bay Area? What are some of the things you're considering today that might be different from like 5-10 years ago or within grant making?
I'm a commissioner with the Berkeley Civic Arts Commission, and I'm the chair of the Grants Committee. And one of the things that we're going through right now is going through a reassessment and evaluation of our current grants program, because I think everyone, even the sort of long-standing grantees, would agree that it's not the most effective way of distributing the money. And we also are sort of strapped because we have an extremely robust and strong arts community, especially pound for pound. Like, compared to San Francisco, it's underfunded, but it actually has some of the strongest Bay Area arts institutions. And so we're also trying to figure out how to get more funding and more money to support the arts community. So we're going through that process. We're also just recently got sort of the okay from the city council to undergo a private percent for art legislation sort of research process, because we understand that, you know, in the Bay there's this explosion of development. There's all of these folks coming in who are marketing their new apartment buildings by saying, oh, we're right next to these cultural things, but they're not necessarily contributing money. Yeah, so we're trying to make sure that, okay, you're obviously benefiting from this, and you know that these things are part of the appeal of why you're doing these developments. So let's find ways of making sure that you're contributing to the artistic community. So that's sort of moving forward slowly. And I think one of the other things that emerged from that discussion with City Council is that they also are realizing that that's, you know, development funds are sort of one-time infusions of money that can be quite significant, but aren't really good for ongoing supports for organizations and artists. And so we're also trying to figure out ways of making sure we have a more built-in legislated source of funding, whether it's a hotel tax fund, whether it's Airbnb kinds of things, whatever sources that's coming from. And so we're in the process of having those discussions, trying to push that forward, working with some of the sort of organizational leaders and organizers. Amy LeDuc, who is the head of the Berkeley Cultural Trust, which is sort of the arts advocacy coalition of folks. And so we're trying to find ways of bridging the connection between the commissioners and the BCT to make sure we push forward these things.
Is there anything that Berkeley residents should do?
Hopefully especially as we start moving forward with these things, and at the moments where we're bringing the actual legislation to City Council, I think that would be a really great time to have the support and people show up. It was actually great when we were at the City Council meeting last week. One of the other sort of organizers who was there for a totally different cause got up and spoke very, very strongly in support of the arts. So I think those moments are always encouraging when people sort of cross issues and are like, oh yeah, we believe in the arts too. We know what the impact is on the work that we're doing, so we're going to speak to that as well. So we definitely will try to get people out there for those moments when we're actually bringing those things before City Council.
Is there anything else you'd like listeners to know in general?
I think I've realized that the community that I want to build for myself in some ways is of other artists who are sort of moving between these kinds of roles in the community, because I know there's a lot of artists who do that work and it's not always legible because it's either not appropriate for us to sort of say, oh, I also do these other things, or, you know, there's ways that artists and arts administrators are always supporting one another that's sort of under the radar. And so if there's other folks who are in those kinds of roles and want to chat, I'm always interested in having those conversations with people.
Cool. Well, we'll put a link to your website where they can get your contact information, and anybody else can look at all the stuff you're doing. But in conclusion,
congratulations.
And thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
Artists, new opportunity coming up. BayVac has a little residency they're doing now.
Yeah.
Very exciting, because I think they give like $2,000 or $3,000 to you in little increments. Plus you get some free classes there. You get use of their equipment. You get a little locker or whatever. You get to be the cock of the walk over there at BayVac.
You get to be famous.
I call it BayVac. But it's not whack. It's cool.
You can be famous at BayVac.
You can be famous. Oh, God. Sorry. We're sorry, BayVac.
No, BayVac.
But you should go ahead and apply to that. I'll put a link down in the link zone. Sounds like a pretty great opportunity. Not going to lie. What's up with residencies?
What do you mean? I don't know.
Soon as he left the building. Okay. I used to work for an artist.
Do you want me to explain to you what a residency is?
What a residency is, it's where an artist goes to some place. Hopefully they pay you a stipend. A lot of places don't. A lot of places make you pay to be there. And you have a studio space and you're surrounded by other artists and, you know, hopefully you have a sink.
The bathroom.
Yeah.
Kitchen.
And you can, usually it's like live work.
Do you live there?
But there's also places that only give you a studio. They charge you to be there, and then you have to provide your own living accommodations, which is cool if you already live in the city where they're doing it. Well, I mean, do you have an opinion on that? I mean, supposedly.
I love residencies. That's like my dream spot.
Oh, to work there?
I would love to work at a residency.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I my interest is always working with artists while they're in the process of.
And then you don't have to deal with all the other added garbage.
I don't think it's garbage. I just, like, you know, in general, that's always the part of working with artists that I've loved the most, is sort of like the moment where they're figuring out a project. Like, I don't really, the finished project is fine and interesting and lovely and it's great, but then it's just sort of, it's up in an exhibition and it's kind of dead a little bit, depending
well
on
this
the
is very interesting. So like, the what best, is it about that, like the getting to like
I think it's just
get a peek into their brain?
I think it's just the most creative part of making a piece, like figuring it out, working it out. And so for me, I think it's just always been fun to be in conversation with artists who are working something out,
because you want to like peek in their thought
process. it's probably because for me it's also a creative outlet. Or it's an opportunity for me to also be creative. So I'm sure it's somewhat selfish, although I've never really thought about it that way. And then it's also like, I think for me, I've always been really interested in supporting artists. Like, what are they thinking? What do they need to try this new idea out? How can I help them get there?
Well, I have never done a residency of my own, except a secret, weird, unsanctioned one.
At Mills?
No, where I used to work for an artist who was doing a residency at Bemis in Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
I will not name who that was. But anyhow, she had to get an apartment separate from the living space that she was provided there because she had her daughter with her, 4-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. And so I got to stay in the studio space.
Oh, nice.
And I would work on little paintings and stuff there, and I pretended that I was doing a residency.
That's great.
So
why not?
Yeah, so
you
that
should.
Was cool.
So did you?
Damn, man, that
did
is
you enjoy
jam.
That? See,
Bemis
you loved it.
Art Center is, well, they're the shit because they pay you a stipend. It's like 3 months. You have a live and workspace. You're with other really awesome artists. You have all this access to all this crazy shit, workshops, and like this weird collection of shit they have in their attic, like old broken pianos and stuff
awesome.
Like that. That place was awesome. And it's right across the street from June Kaneko, who's like a really famous ceramicist. His studio is across, like his giant warehouse studio is across the street. So you see people working on giant sculptures. And then he also has a little tiny library where you can go and get free coffee and look at art books.
No, I love the idea of a residency.
But what about
artists?
Where you have
awesome.
To pay to do it?
No, God, no.
Right. What the fuck?
I just don't. I can't imagine how that could be worth it unless you don't have a. I don't know. Would you even get it if you didn't have a studio already? I mean, it's sort of like, why pay for a studio space unless it's, you know, a prestigious residency, which I can't imagine it would be if you're paying.
Or unless it's like right next door to your family's house.
But why would you pay? Why not just go to your fucking family's house and use the attic for a studio?
Some of those places have financial aid, so maybe you could like... You'd basically be getting like a free studio and then living with like your brother or something.
I don't know. I just feel bad when artists are asked to pay for those kinds of opportunities. I'm like, isn't that not really an opportunity anymore? I mean, yes, of course it can be. And I think a lot of times with residencies, it's really about being part of a community of artists working creatively and the exchange of ideas.
And sometimes those places also have like a show or open studios or something where they're saying that, you know, movers and shakers are going to come through and see your work and you're going to get like gallery representation.
Exposure. Yeah. I mean, that's often, exposure is often one of the payment methods.
Bait.
Congratulations!
You made it through another episode of Congratulations Pine Tree.
Good job.
Be sure to check out all the links we got down there. Do you guys look at the links? I'd love to know that.
There's
I put a lot of time into those links. Sometimes I editorialize in the links and I put little secret weird things sometimes that you've got to find like a little Easter egg. But check that all out and be sure to get in contact with us. It was real nice this week to have a little bit of listener feedback. I know all you sons of bitches have a lot to say about the show because we say some real weird dumb shit on here. 419-351-6606. Call or text. Remember, if you call, you'll just go straight to voicemail. You don't have to worry about any kind of awkward conversation you'll be having because I won't be talking to you. Or you can bird the bird.
You can also email us at congratulationspinetree@gmail.com.
Oh, we got that email running again.
Yeah. And it's also connecting to us.
Yeah. Well, I forwarded it to me. Email that email or bird is the word at Pine Tree Podcast.